This is episode 9 of season 3 of the Game Theory Explained podcast. And today we will be talking to Robert Orman about nuclear weapons as a method of keeping peace.
When you're talking about conflict, like the standoff that was between the Soviet Union, Russia, and the West, specifically the United States, during the second half of the 20th century, so that's already a long time ago, okay? It's more than 30 years ago already. That standoff was a matter of conflict, okay? So it's called the Cold War. I don't know whether you know that term. You're a young lady, and maybe that term is... Now, are you familiar with that term, the Cold War?
Yeah.
So now the Cold War never became hot, okay? Never became hot. That means it wasn't really a war, because a war is when people do bomb each other and kill each other, and a Cold War is not a war, fortunately. Okay, now the Cold War remained cold because of mutual threats of nuclear attacks by one side on the other side, or by both sides, yes. What kept the Cold War from becoming a war, from becoming hot, was the existence of nuclear weapons. Okay, it sounds paradoxical, yes, because I was there. I was I lived throughout the Cold War, throughout the 40 to 45 years of the Cold War, okay? I lived throughout that period. And there were many demonstrations against nuclear weapons, okay? Students, especially in the United States and in the West, not so much in Russia, but in the United States and in the West, they said that nuclear weapons are a terrible thing, yes, and you know what damage they can cause, and they should be outlawed, and we should destroy our nuclear weapons unilaterally, okay, and all that kind of thing. But in fact, nuclear weapons kept the peace, okay? The peace was kept because of nuclear weapons, all right? And the way I put it sometime is that these weapons, and to some extent all weapons, exist in order not to be used, okay? That is the raison d'etre of weapon systems, and especially nuclear weapons. They exist in order not to be used, but they have to be in working order, okay? Otherwise, they're useless, okay? Now, the United States, and I think probably also Russia, for 40 or more years, they had aircraft in the air, okay, in the air, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and in leap years, 366. They were carrying nuclear weapons, and they had them in the air, okay, all that time. course, no particular plane stayed in the air for 40 years, but they took turns, okay? And that is what kept the peace, okay? Because of the threat. Now, it sounds very easy to understand, but many people during that period did not understand that, okay? They didn't understand how nuclear weapons bring about peace, but they did, okay. Okay.
Right. So that was very interesting, actually. What in your 60 years of researching in this field, what other interesting topics have you applied game theory to?
One of them is repeated games, another, the repeated games and the cooperation. This is something I published in 59. Afterwards, I published again about it, several papers. But another one is repeated games of incomplete information, yes, where you really don't know what game you're playing. Now, and let me give an example of that, and it actually grew out of this. During the 60s and 70s, there was a series of conferences in Geneva in Switzerland, which was aimed at reducing the number of nuclear weapons that are available to both sides, okay? And naturally, what it came to in the end is destroying a number of nuclear weapons. Each side would agree to destroy a certain number of nuclear weapons. But now the question is, the number that you destroy should depend on the number that you have, okay? But you don't know the number that the other side has. You don't know that. It's a game of incomplete information. So incomplete information means that you don't really know what game you're playing, okay? Because the game that you're playing depends on the number of nuclear weapons that the other side has. And so we started to study this subject, the solution to games of incomplete, to repeated games of incomplete information. And we came to the conclusion, we came to a quite an interesting conclusion. And that is that in a repeated game of incomplete information, the way you play in the game is going to reveal the information that you have, okay? So we had a series of disarmament conferences or arms reduction conferences, arms control conferences in Geneva during the 60s and 70s. So that was a repeated game. Now, your strategy, your tactics in that conference may give away information implicitly, not explicitly, implicitly it gives away information about how many bombs you have, okay? So how insistent you are and so on, this may give away information on your position. And we developed this and we showed that in a game of incomplete information like this, you have a choice between using your information but if you use it, you also implicitly reveal it, or not using your information. You don't use it. You ignore your information. You can ignore your own information. Yeah, that might be better for you in a repeated game to ignore your own information. Although on the short term, your information can help you, But in the long term, if you don't ignore it, then the other side can implicitly deduce from your actions what your information is, and the other side may be able to use that to its advantage. So in some cases, you use your information, thereby revealing it. And in some cases, you ignore your information, thereby concealing it. Okay. That was the... so we had... this was fairly deep work on the games of incomplete information. And after that, at the same time, I got into this research on the law of supply and demand, markets, production economies, and so on, and also the work on interactive epistemology, and various works of that kind. All right.
This was it for episode 9 of season 3 of the Game Theory Explained podcast, and next week we will conclude our discussion with Professor Robert Ormond.